From KMUW Studios and part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Books and Whatnot. I'm Beth Golay, host of KMUW's Marginalia.
And I'm Suzanne Perez, KMUW's resident book reviewer. This podcast was recorded on August 28th, 2025, so any references to new or forthcoming and the like are relative. Hi, Beth.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. You know, my summer reading has been going along pretty steadily, and I feel pretty good about it. How about you?
Well, I was looking back at some of the books to figure out what I was going to talk about today, because it's been a while since we've recorded, and I thought I would have so many to choose from, and I really don't. I think I'm not reading as much. Or, you know, maybe it's because the books I read for school are on my website, you know, are on the Marginalia website. So
right.
I don't know. Maybe I am reading more, but
reading a lot for work and interviews and things like that, but maybe not necessarily just for pleasure.
I don't know that I ever read just for pleasure.
You do.
Do I?
Do you enjoy reading?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I hate it.
Oh, why are we even here? Well, coming up later in this episode, we are going to chat a little bit about books that are coming to a screen near you, whether that's the big screen or the little screen. We're going to talk about adaptations coming up. There's some exciting things happening in that realm. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later this episode. But first, let's just get right into what we've been reading these past few weeks. What's on your list, Beth?
The first one I want to talk about is a book called Seduction Theory by Emily Adrian. And it is a book set in like a college campus setting. Ethan and Simone are two of the main characters, and they are husband and wife, and they're also colleagues in a creative writing program. And their MFA student, Robbie, short for Roberta, Robbie decides to use them as subjects for her thesis. And if that's not awkward enough, you know, Ethan has an affair, Robbie is infatuated with Simone, and that just further complicates matters. And what struck me immediately when I started reading this is that, you know, the story is being told by Robbie. It is her thesis. We are reading her thesis. And as she's describing details that she cannot possibly know, you know, immediately the unreliable narrator flags go up.
Ooh.
But when she reads her work aloud to like to her cohort, they believe they're reading a work of fiction, and it doesn't even strike them how closely this resembles their professors. But the professors know.
Yeah, they're like their flags are going off for
exactly,
sure.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly. Exactly. I mean, it just felt very meta at times. Robbie would we would read, you know, a paragraph that she writes, and then she's like, nope, strike that, I'm going to try it again. And then we'd read another attempt at an introduction paragraph. And then we'd, I mean, there might be four different paragraphs in a row.
So you actually sort of see the editing process.
Yeah,
not
in a
editing,
way.
But self-editing.
Yeah, yes. All typewritten. There are no like notes on a page,
oh,
no
neat.
Marginalia, but it's just as she's like, you know, writing it.
I love an interesting structure.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
it's very
that
interesting.
Sounds great.
And I talked to her when I told her, I said, you know, I really refrained from looking up her bona fides to see where she went to school, where she received her MFA, who, like, if, was this something about
Iowa?
Was this writing, was she writing about her professors in real life?
That would be super meta, wouldn't it?
But she didn't get an MFA.
Oh, really?
This is completely made up. I didn't get an MFA.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that, so that's that is that you had an interview with that author?
Oh, yes.
And
yes. Emily Adrian. That's okay. Available to listen to on Marginalia. And yeah, it's a fun read. I mean, a good summer escape.
That's
really.
What it sounds like.
Yeah.
Some scandalous.
Yeah, exactly.
Fiction.
So, and it was right. You know, I think I was reading it right when fall semester was beginning again. So it just felt.
Yeah,
like a good time.
Seems like it would be a good fall read, too,
yeah, exactly.
If people are looking for academia-themed novels.
Okay. So that's Seduction Theory by Emily Adrian.
Sounds great. Okay, my first one is something I read absolutely just on my own for fun. I actually listened to the audio. This is a celebrity memoir. It's Accidentally on Purpose by Kristen Kish. Are you a Top Chef fan at all, Beth?
No.
Okay, I watch a lot of cooking shows. You wouldn't be able to tell from my cooking. but I am a huge fan of Top Chef. And Kristen Kish was the season 10 winner of Top Chef. She has gone on after Padma you know, went off the show a couple years ago. She's gone on to be the host of that show.
You know who Padma is, right? Who she was married to?
No.
Salman Rushdie.
Oh, I think I did know that at one point. Oh, wow. But not now. But they're not married now.
No.
That's right, because his memoir had that different woman.
Right, the poet. I don't remember now her
name. All right. Man, so everything comes back to books.
Right. You know, everything comes back to Salman Rushdie.
Yes, exactly.
But go ahead.
Well, when Padma went away from the show, Kristen Kish came aboard. She's just a delightful personality to watch on TV, but I knew nothing about her life. So when I saw this book had come out and it was available on audio, I love to do celebrity memoirs on audio, as you know. I sort of thought, well, maybe this is the next Stanley Tucci food-themed memoir. Actually, the bulk of this memoir is her childhood. She is an adopted child. She was born in Korea, knew nothing about her birth family, was adopted by this Michigan family. So a lot of the memoir talks about her childhood as an Asian American adoptee and sort of everything that went along with that. And then she's also gay. And so a lot of the memoir sort of chronicles her journey to come out of the closet. And it was a long time. She was an adult before she actually came out. And so there's just a lot of different things to this story that go well beyond the food aspect. So even if you're not necessarily a foodie, I think you could gain a lot from just listening to her story. She narrates it fantastically. And I usually think if a celebrity has a memoir and they narrate it themselves, audio is the way to go. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that way for this one as well. She's also just delightful in the way that she talks about her favorite snack foods. And she's just like a junk food addict, which you don't think about with chefs. She also gets into the politics of Top Chef and the behind the scenes of how that show comes together, how the audition process works, and how some of them knew each other personally before coming on the show. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a tell-all, juicy, gossipy type thing, but there are definite characters in her, people in her life, not characters, but there are definite people in her life that influenced her one way or another. She had some really, really great mentors in the industry, and then she had people that she looked to as poor examples of of what she didn't want to be like. So I just think all in all, if you enjoy a celebrity memoir or if you like Top Chef or if any of these sort of topics speak to you, it is an excellent read. It was, you know, pretty short. It was great to listen to in the car as I was tooling around. That is Accidentally on Purpose by Kristen Kish.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so for my next one, I have a little bit of backstory. When my daughters were young and I was working at Watermark, a woman who lived in Chanute, Kansas, and worked for the Kansas State University Extension Office wrote a book for young adults, and it was called I'd Tell You I Love You, But Then I'd Have to Kill You by Allie Carter. And it was about a spy school for teenagers, like this little bitty romance. I mean, it was about spies, but they also fall in love. You know, young readers loved them. My daughters loved them, and she was so kind to my daughters. I loved them. And she wrote several books in that series and then a few other series for young adults. And she was in between contracts and trying to decide what to write next. And her friend, who's also an author, and I'm tempted to say one name, but I'll probably get it wrong, so I'm not even going to mention that author's name. But she said to Allie Carter, she said, you need to write a book for adults. And she said, no, I can't. She pushed back and said, I can't do that. And this author friend of hers said, you know, the girls who loved the Gallagher Girl series when they were 15 years old are now 30.
It's time.
And so she wrote a kind of a spy romance thriller for adults called The Blonde Identity. And then the sequel that just came out is called The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold. And it's
for her audience that's all grown up now.
Yes.
That's so cool.
It's really funny because this book, the second one, is the first one is about this one twin, and the second one is about her twin sister, right?
Oh.
And only one is actually like in the CIA. And she writes about like this farm or, you know, where everybody goes to be trained. And she said, I've never actually been there, but she was at a book event in Washington, D.C. All her fans, who are now 30,
mm-hmm.
she realized that, you know, a lot of them, I mean, they're in Washington, D.C. for a reason. So she said, has anybody here been to the farm? And like hands shot up in the air. She's like, okay, you guys need to stay after.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So a lot of these young women who work in these various fields, likely because they read, I'd tell you I love you, but then I'd have to kill you. In fact, I was at my daughter's bachelorette party. I was the cook.
Mm-hmm. The hostess with the mostest.
Somebody asked me what I had been reading lately, and or who I had talked to, and I said, oh, I interviewed Allie Carter. And there were so many audible gasps. Oh. I mean, these women are 29 and 30 years old, right?
Yeah.
And this one, she even like jumped and gasped and like her drink spilled. It was just so funny that she still has this pull.
Of course.
For these young, I mean, she was their formation.
Exactly. Yeah. The books you read at that age especially are just, are always in your heart. You know, you've got all the Harry Potter fans out there. And yeah, you know, I mean, I still, yeah, think fondly of the books that I read when I was in high school. And they're like, it's like the Taylor Swift audience too, you know, sort of getting older. But congratulations, by the way, to
I thought we were going to be the only people who did not mention this. But okay, congrats.
We're culturally aware. But they're Allie Carter readers, and they're probably Taylor Swift listeners.
Yeah. So if you were a fan of Allie Carter as a, you know, a young woman, she has something for you now. And it's this adult spy series. Well, it's a book and a sequel, but they can be read independently. I will say that I read and listened to, I went back and read The Blonde Identity just because I thought, well, these are connected. I should read them. And I listened, you know how I like to read and listen at the same time.
Yeah. The tandem read.
I did not like the audio at
all. Oh, good to know. Good to know.
And so I only read.
Was it just the narrator that drove you nuts or something?
Yeah, well, there were two narrators.
Oh.
And like when the woman narrator tried to do the man's voice, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. When the man narrator tried to do the woman's voice, I didn't like it.
That's good that you were doing it tandem so you could just drop the audio and just continue with the print.
I don't remember. I mean, I was in a hurry, so I probably did continue with the audio. But I didn't want to. I don't know how the audio on the second book sounds. It mm-hmm. might be just fine, but I didn't take the chance.
Yeah. Hey, good to know. Yeah. That's news people can use.
You also heard me. I was critical about something.
I know. This, I'm proud of you,
Beth.
Let's
mark that.
I'm very proud of
Beth
you.
Beth was mean.
No, too.
Check.
It's best to say that audio just wasn't for you.
Correct.
Someone else might love that particular style of audio.
They might, but it also, to me, it portrayed the characters in a way that I can't speak for Allie Carter, but this, like the woman, she came across as so ditzy in the audio.
Oh,
and
weird.
When you read her on the page, she didn't feel like that.
Interesting. That so, would
know,
make
how
me
a
crazy.
Voice will,
like maybe upspeak or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Or,
I don't know.
Yep. I absolutely know how a voice can completely change the picture that you have in your mind of that character.
Right.
Yeah.
She went from capable to being
ditzy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I would. Yeah. Well, it's good to know. It's good to know, you know, whether or not sometimes the print is better. Sometimes the audio is better.
So sorry, Allie.
No. still a great book.
Yeah. Okay. So that was, both The Blonde Identity and The Blonde Who Came In From the Cold by Allie Carter.
All right. My next one, Beth, is super grim, super dark and brutal. It's Angel Down by Daniel Krauss.
Mm.
I picked this up because I absolutely loved Daniel Krauss's previous novel, which ended up being kind of a unexpected hit. It was called Whale Fall. And the premise of that novel was a man gets swallowed by a whale while diving and needs to get out. In a very compact nutshell, that was Whale Fall. When I heard that Daniel Krauss was doing a war novel, obviously, I am not a war novel aficionado by any means, and I don't read a lot of war novels or watch a lot of war movies, but I picked it up because it was him. This was a love this author, got to see what he's up to. And this novel, the first thing you should know about it is that it's told in one sentence. So
that's right.
It had a lot going for it right off the bat for me. Author I loved, odd structure, a WTF premise, which is we're on the battlefield in World War I. a soldier named Cyril Bagger, who's kind of a card shark and a swindler, and he just a very reluctant soldier, doesn't want to be there, but ended up on the battlefield, as so many do. He has a near-death experience, and then he's called up by one of his commanding officers, along with four other soldiers, to go out. They hear this mysterious shrieking, which is very bizarre and atmospheric in the novel. They hear this mysterious shrieking, which sounds like someone in pain, and they're told by their commanding officers to go and take care of that wounded comrade, which is probably, they're thinking, put him out of his misery. But when they get close to the source of that sound, they realize it's not a soldier at all. It is a fallen angel. So Angel Down, the title of this novel, is very literal in this case. It is this glowing Madonna figure on the battlefield in this red dress and blue robe. It's actually inspired by a very famous Madonna painting. And she has been struck down. And then here are these five lowest of the low soldiers, grunts in every way, are tasked with, what do we do here? You know, could she save us in this moment in time? Could she perhaps save the world? It takes off from there in such a breathless kind of pace. The one sentence, lest you be, I know that there's going to be a lot of listeners out there who are like, no, I'm out. One sentence, I need my punctuation, I'm out. It is surprisingly readable because it's just structured where every paragraph starts with and. So it's a comma, and kind of thing. And before you know it, it's one of those things where you're reading and eventually it just feels very natural. And the chapters are quite short. The scenes are really vivid. It is lots of trigger warnings here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's war in every way. He does not back down from describing horrible, horrible scenes of war. But this is a, you know, just like Whale Fall, a sort of breath-by-breath account of what these soldiers do. And it turns into something that's so much bigger than even the war itself. And as we sort of think about the war industry, how much value our society puts on war and how important it is to a lot of cultures and governments and all that sort of thing. It's hard to describe. I came away from it loving it much, much more than I thought I would. I can't stop thinking about it. Five-star read for me. That is Angel Down by Daniel Krauss.
Okay. So my next one is a book called Until Allison by Kate Russo. And this is kind of a literary thriller. It explores class and gender and violence and silence and the ultimate horror, junior high.
That's well done, Beth.
But it follows the evolution and dissolved friendship of these two women, Allison and Rachel. We're introduced in the immediate hours and days following Allison's mysterious death. It touches on some tough issues like bullying, navigating politics during your college years, contrasts between facts and fiction, because Rachel, she's working on the school newspaper and she's assigned to cover this, but she knew Allison in junior high. She was, you know, she turned into one of the bullies.
Oh, she was a mean girl.
They were really close until they weren't.
Oh.
And so it was interesting to watch as this investigation unfolded. It was interesting to watch her cover it, knowing what she knew. It was interesting to have, like, the faculty advisor talking about, you know, I like to tell lies, so that's why I write fiction, and maybe you shouldn't be a newspaper writer. I don't know. There were just a lot of interesting aspects about it, but I think one of my favorite things, I especially liked when the author wrote about Rachel's parents, describing them as NPR listeners and such. And I asked her about it. And I asked her if there was a resemblance between Rachel's dad and her dad, because her dad is Richard Russo.
I wondered. I was going to ask if there was any relation. I love Richard Russo.
And her sister, Emily Russo, owns a bookstore.
Wow.
And she said her mother is not in publishing at all, but she reads more than anybody she knows.
Well, she must with all of those writers in her family.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was a fun conversation. It was a fun book. And it was, I feel like I'm just reading the ultimate summer reads.
Yeah, no kidding. That's great. And there's still, you know, plenty of summer left in Kansas anyway, where we're broadcasting from. It's going to be summer, although we're having a nice little fall-like week
here. It's
like
in the 60s
right now. I know, but you know how it is.
Yes,
it's going to be, I would bet we'll be in the high 90s again before summer is done with us.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Anyway, but yeah, plenty of summer reading.
Yeah, anyway, that's Until Allison by Kate Russo.
All right. So my next one is another example of saw the author, had to have it. This is So Far Gone by Jess Walter.
Oh, yeah.
Jess Walter is the author of Beautiful Ruins, a wonderful novel from a while back, The Cold Millions. This one is kind of a irreverent sort of, oh my gosh, how do you even describe this book other than, I mean, I absolutely loved it. It tells the story of this crusty guy named Reese Kinnick. He is a former environmental reporter. And I have to say the scenes and the conversations in this book around journalism are so spot on that I knew he had to have been a reporter to talk about this. It talks about sort of the state of journalism in his conversations with some former colleagues. But it gets political as well. So here the setup is Reese Kinnick decides he's had it with politics. At one Thanksgiving, he and his son-in-law, his daughter's husband, really get into it after the 2016 election. He leaves in a huff and just decides, there's no hope for this world. I cannot even, you know, as the kids say, I just cannot with this. And he escapes to his grandfather's old cabin in the, you know, sort of boondocks of Washington State. This is apparently where Jess Walter is from, is around the Spokane area of Washington. So he, you know, goes out into the Washington woods. But after a few years, there's a knock at his door, and it's his estranged grandchildren at the door. If this sounds a little bit like my other favorite novel of the year, The Road to Tender Hearts, it's because it kind of is. But his estranged grandchildren are at the door. Their mother, his daughter, has left and left a note with a neighbor that to take them to his house. And he's just kind of shocked, and what is going on here? What proceeds from there is an adventure like you will not believe. They're kidnapped. He tries to get them back. There's all sorts of interesting characters. There's a compound run by the Church of the Blessed Fire. It's madcap and suspenseful and pretty hilarious. I was laughing out loud through much of this novel. His writing is just so on point. And like I said, he drops in these little bits of wisdom that on the journalism front, for instance, he's talking to this former colleague and he's like, who's covering the religious right these days? And his former colleague says, our government reporter. He's like so out of it, like, oh, you know, I used to cover, you know, it was sort of an outskirts beat, and now it's the government beat. Or, you know, she talks about, you know, how newspapers, he thinks newspapers still have librarians and libraries and clips and things like that. And she's like, Reese, what are you talking about? but it comes together in such a wonderful way. It ends pretty hopefully. And it really did remind me, speaking of Richard Rousseau, his writing reminded me a great deal of Richard Rousseau, maybe from like Nobody's Fool. Mm-hmm. You have these crusty older men characters who, you know, just are sort of bumbling about and learning the way kids do it these days. And it was delightful. I loved every minute of it. That was So Far Gone by Jess Walter.
Okay. I have one more, and is The Elements by John Boyne.
Okay.
So this is a novel that is made up of four connected novellas, Water, Earth, Fire, and Air. And these four stories look at sexual abuse, and each is told from a different perspective on crime. The first one, Water, it's about the enabler.
Mm.
The second one is the accomplice. The third is the perpetrator. And the fourth is the victim.
So is this like air, water, fire, earth?
Water, earth, fire, and air.
Okay.
And he told me, I talked to him yesterday, and he told me that the characters' names, like water, it's Willow.
Oh.
Earth is Evan. Fire is Freya. And then air was Aaron. So I didn't even make that connection.
Wow.
But yeah. I feel like I should include a trigger warning because they were difficult to read at times. But what I found interesting about these novellas is that they were published like a traditional serial. Hmm. When Water came out, Boyne was working on Fire. And so there was like no going back to change Water if he had to make something more convenient because it was already published. You know, like when Dickens was publishing.
Right.
It was out there. There was no going back and editing. I found that interesting. But also, the book challenges the reader to consider what they expect from men and women in terms of who is the perpetrator of violence and who is the victim.
Oh.
The first story is about a man who, it kind of reminds me of the whole U.S. gymnastics thing, but this is a swimming thing in Ireland, and like eight young girls were abused.
Okay.
But the third story, the abuser is a doctor who was traumatized. She was raped when she was 12 by two 14-year-old twins. And so her victims are all 14-year-old boys.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, you don't hear a lot of women in, like, you don't hear of a lot of women serial killers or women rapists, but Boyne really challenges us to think about that a little bit. One thing he said was, like, you know, you hear all these teachers who might have inappropriate relationships with their students. And he said, if somebody's underage, it is rape. But we don't call it that. And you might hear men say, oh, I wish I would have had a teacher like that, and just joke about things like that. And it's not a laughing matter.
Right.
And it's I don't know. He just challenges us to how are we treating when these things do happen in society? How is it that we are treating them?
And equal opportunity perpetrators, it sounds like.
Right.
It could be. Yeah. Anyone has the capacity for that kind of violence.
Right.
Ugh. Sounds like a difficult read. But four novellas, like interconnected novellas?
Yeah, like the first one, there's a minor character who then shows up as the main character in the second one.
Okay, so but he published them separately, but now they're all put together into one work.
In one book, yeah.
Okay.
So you can buy the independent novellas, or this one is called The Elements for all, like the water, earth, fire,
okay.
And air.
Okay, interesting.
And they're all in one book.
Well, you know I love John Boyne's work. Obviously, he wrote The Boy in Striped Pajamas,
right.
But also Ladder to the Sky, which has the most despicable character ever in it. And then Heart's Invisible Furies.
Right.
Man, that was a big novel a while back. I look forward to hearing your interview with him.
Thank you. Yeah.
Right.
So that's The Elements by John Boyne.
Okay. Well, I have two more, actually, that I want to talk about because they are other books I can't stop thinking about. One, I did not write a review for KMUW, so I want to definitely mention it in the podcast, and that is The Correspondent by Virginia Evans. This is an epistolary novel all told in letters and emails and notes from a character named Sybil Van Antwerp. So we meet Sybil. We don't know much about her, but we learn about her completely through these correspondences that she has. We learn that she is a retired attorney and law clerk. And she just kind of tries to make sense of her whole world and her place in it through these letters. And it is really well told. It's a debut novel. You know, it did not have much buzz leading up to its release. But since it was released earlier this year, I've seen it in a lot of places online. And it's just got lots of sort of book club buzz. People are talking about it maybe inspiring their own old-fashioned letter writing. Hmm. The cover really does not do this book justice. And I want to say that in a future episode, Beth and I have decided to do an episode where we talk about great books, horrible covers. But I would put this right there because it has this really it's just a very light, bright cover of two birds on a fence. And, you know, I guess the whole thought is, you know, tweet, tweet, you know, like we're talking to each other, like they're, you know, birds on a line, you know, sort of talking back and forth, or like the whole idea of pen pals or whatever. This book, though, deals with grief and loss and aging and all these really, really heavy themes that are not really portrayed by that cover. So if you were to just look at the cover, you would think it's, you know, sort of a throwaway, you know, novel, but it is super thought-provoking. The other great thing I loved about this novel is some of the letters she writes are to authors. She's a big reader, and she often ends her letter to friends with, "What are you reading lately? I just read such and such," but these are real books.
Oh, wow.
And some of her letters are to real authors like Larry McMurtry and Ann Patchett and Joan Didion, and she has actual correspondences with those authors, so that's kind of neat, too. And that is The Correspondent by Virginia Evans. Which brings us to my last one for today, which is The Long Walk by, well, it's by Richard Bachman, which is a pseudonym for Stephen King.
Huh.
And I read it precisely for the reason of it being a movie coming up in September. So this is a book that Stephen King started working on when he was in high school, but it wasn't published until after he had published some of his other novels, including Carrie. It's one of those things he sort of, you know, had percolating in the back of his mind. It's a dystopian situation where, and if you've seen the trailer, I highly recommend the trailer that's online now for this movie that's coming out in September. But the idea is we're in this dystopian world where there's a contest held every year, and young men will sign up to walk on this long walk, and they start, and they have to walk in the, interestingly, in the book, it's 4 miles an hour. They have to keep a pace of 4 miles an hour. In the movie, they changed it to 3, because I've heard that Stephen King actually, when he saw the pace they were walking in the movie, said, "No, we need to slow it down. That's 4 is insane.
It's difficult."
Yeah. But there's 100 that start out, and they walk until there's only one left. And the big line in the movie is, there's only one winner and no finish line. Well, you can kind of imagine it being a Stephen King and dystopian novel, what happens to the people who stop walking. They are disposed of, let's say. So super suspenseful. I read it on the plane when I was heading off on a vacation, and it was the perfect read. You know, even though it was one of his earliest works, it just really holds up and, you know, raises a lot of questions, as so many of his books do, about, you know, good and evil and what drives you to, you know, put your life on the line and things like that, because all of these young men have different reasons for why they're walking. And I am so looking forward to the movie. It's going to be super tense, but I'm really looking forward to it. That's The Long Walk by Richard Bachman, a pseudonym for Stephen King.
Okay, very good. Good list.
Yes, which brings us to, though, real quickly, I want to go over some other movies that are coming out this fall. It seems like it is adaptation season coming up, The Long Walk being one of them. Something I was reading when I was going online, kind of researching this, The Hollywood Reporter says, looks like Hollywood is circling back on the most classic intellectual property of all, and that is classic literature. At the moment, there are several new Pride and Prejudices in the works. A couple of Frankensteins, including a Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein that we have to look forward to, plus Wuthering Heights, and then Christopher Nolan is doing The Odyssey with Matt Damon as Odysseus.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's incredible. Netflix is working on a limited series adaptation of John Steinbeck's East of Eden, which I just happened to read. Did I read that earlier this year or last year? Now I can't even remember.
Year.
Yeah, I read it last summer. Starring Florence Pugh as Kathy Ames, that despicable character. I look forward to seeing that. And then AMC is redoing Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath as the first in a planned anthology called Great American Stories.
Hmm.
So that's just incredibly interesting. I know which one you are probably excited about, though.
Well, I'm looking. So Suzanne has a whole list here in our document, and I just need to look. Hang on just a second. I'm going to count the number of books on here that I've read.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
uh-huh.
I've read 6.
That's pretty good. You Is Little House on the Prairie one of them?
I didn't count that one, no. I don't know that I've ever read Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, really? I loved those as a kid, and I was not in Kansas. I grew up in North Carolina reading, being very excited for the next Little House on the Prairie book
Maybe that's why you landed here.
I know. It almost seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah, there's a Little House on the Prairie reboot coming. But the history of sound,
yeah.
Beth.
You also shared the trailer with me, and
oh my
wow.
Gosh. This is a movie based on just the title story in that wonderful short story collection that we talked about last year.
And he wrote the screenplay, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I think that's what he told me.
So that's the History of Sound, Ben Shattuck short story collection coming out in September. We've got the Maggie O'Farrell Hamnet adaptation coming out.
I did not read that one.
Oh, you didn't? You would like it because it's Shakespeare.
I'm sure I would. I talked to her for I Am, I Am, I Am.
Right, the memoir.
Mm-hmm. But I did not.
Yeah, that's all right. I know. There's so many books.
I know.
No, that one was one that came out. I want to say it came out during the pandemic, too. So it sort of got
maybe
short shrift. It's about the life of Shakespeare and his marriage and his child. Then there's, you know, Freda McFadden, all the kids love. Freda McFadden thrillers, and Netflix is producing The Housemaid, which is coming out in December. I am super excited about this one. Margot's Got Money Troubles.
I didn't read it.
Oh, wow. Well, I listened to it, and the narrator was Elle Fanning. Guess who's starring as Margot in the movie? Elle Fanning. And Nicole Kidman. I'm not sure what role she is playing, but that is a fantastic one. We've got the big Wicked, the second part of Wicked coming out.
I've read that one.
I
counted that as one that I've read.
Yeah, so I have not read any of the Gregory Maguire novels.
So good.
I should read them because my introduction to Wicked was through the musical. So, so I should go back and read those. And then no surprise here, there is A Sunrise on the Reaping, which is the Hunger Games prequel, which came out this year, is already in the works for a November 2026 release. And then this one kind of surprises me, Deep Cuts by Holly Brickley. This is a novel that just came out. I mean, I think that it's true. A lot of directors and producers are getting a hold of novels before they're ever released.
Or it could be like that Daniel Krauss, Guillermo del Toro, when they wrote, was it The Shape of Water? Was
yes.
that what it's called?
Yes.
And it was like a simultaneous creation.
Yeah, that's so bizarre. Yeah. I never watched that, but I need to. Wasn't that an Oscar winner, too?
Probably.
I think so. So Deep Cuts, I've almost bought that several times, but then have hesitated because I have too many on my stack already. But that is kind of a music-related story. It's getting comped to Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh, okay.
And then Colleen Hoover is ever present in our lives.
Is that
so Verity.
Verity is? I've never read her.
Verity. I haven't either. Verity is the novel that my niece keeps wanting me to read. So maybe I will get to it before May of 26 when this movie is supposed to be out. Beth, are you prompted to read books when they become movies? What's your relationship with books and movies?
I rarely see movies.
Okay. Even if you've read the book, you won't go and see the movie right away?
I have such limited time.
Yeah, for sure.
I just really don't go see movies.
And unfortunately, they're often so disappointing if you have read the book.
Yeah, true. But the next one on the list is the one that I actually had the audible response when I said, ooh.
Uh-huh.
Because I might go see this one.
Which one?
Vladimir.
Oh.
By Julia Mae Jones.
You interviewed her.
I did. And she is let me get this right. I think she's a playwright.
Oh.
But she had written this novel.
Did you consider the novel pretty cinematic? I haven't read it. But is it one of those novels that you're like, oh gosh, this would be great on a screen?
I hadn't really thought about
it. Isn't it an academia kind of setting? Well, you don't even have to go and watch it because it's going to be on Netflix.
Okay, there you go.
You don't have to go anywhere.
It was just one that was a lot of fun.
Oh, my goodness. That's one that I may pick up. Now, see, that's what I do. If I haven't read a book and I've heard a great buzz about it and just haven't gotten to it, knowing that a movie is coming out about it will prompt me to catch
I'm
up.
I'm with you there. I would, if there is a book, I would rather read it first and then go see the movie.
Yeah. And I know people who will go see the movie and then read the book. And I don't know that I have ever done that.
No.
I really
once the movie's out, it's like, oh, why bother?
Exactly.
I'm tempted though. I'm tempted to do that for The Martian.
Oh,
because I
yeah.
bought The Martian. I was supposed to read it for a book club. I failed. The movie came out, and I have watched that movie so many times. I don't know why. It's what, like my comfort movie. And I'm really tempted to go back and read the book now because I would probably understand the science a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I hear the book is great. And speaking of which, and I forgot to put it on the list, and I can't believe I forgot, but Project Hail Mary is coming out. And that I really do want to read before I have the audio. I hear the audio is fantastic. So I want to get through the audio before going to see the movie. But that gives me, I guess the movie release date gives me like a deadline.
A deadline, yeah. I might read that one with you.
The Whisper Man, fans of Alex North thrillers.
I've never heard of it.
The Whisper Man is coming out, starring Robert De Niro. These are in the way future, I believe.
Okay.
This one, a new Cujo. So there's lots of, Stephen King's been around so long that there are remakes of his remakes of his films. I'm Glad My Mom Died.
Yeah, you read that one.
The Jessica McCurdy memoir. I do not understand what role Jennifer Aniston will have in here. Is it going to be the mother? For sure. I don't know. That's incredible. Divine Rivals, which is all over Book Talk. Kind of a fantasy novel is coming out. And The Husbands by Holly Gramazio.
I was surprised to see that one.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited about that because when I was reading The Husbands, a fantastic summer read, anytime read, really. What a wonderful premise. The whole time I'm thinking, wow, this would make a great movie.
Oh,
that is one of those novels that I'm like, okay, I can totally see this. The Last Mrs. Parrish by Liv Constantine, which is something my husband read and I have not gotten to yet. That's going to be on Netflix, starring Jennifer Lopez. There is that aforementioned Pride and Prejudice reboot. It's going to be starring Emma Corrin, Jack Loudon as Mr. Darcy, and Olivia Colman.
So whenever I talk about my favorite Pride and Prejudice.
And everyone has one, it seems like.
And I like the Keira Knightley one, and people will say, oh no, we have to do the six-hour BBC. I'm going to become that person probably for this one because I don't even want to see this one.
Oh, really?
I love the Keira Knightley one so much.
Oh, so you don't want to, you don't want to even ruin the image in your mind.
I don't.
What's the Keira Knightley one is the Gerwig, the Greta Gerwig one? Is Greta Gerwig the producer of the Keira Knightley one? No. Keira Knightley is earlier, I think.
Greta Gerwig did.
I thought Greta Gerwig did a Pride and Prejudice. Maybe I'm not.
Are you thinking of Little Women?
Oh, yes. We're thinking of Little Women, Pride and Prejudice. What's the diff? Yes, I was thinking of Little
Emma
Women.
Emma Thompson had something to do with the Pride and Prejudice that I.
Yeah,
let me find out.
I was thinking of Little Women.
Directed by Joe Wright.
Okay. And that's the Keira Knightley one?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one with, is that Colin Firth?
No.
No.
This one is Matthew McFadden.
Okay. I think maybe the only one that I've seen all the way through, and I am reading Pride and Prejudice right now, by the way, for my Read ICT category about a popular book you haven't read, I'm reading Pride and Prejudice.
And where does it sit with you right now? Because when you first started reading it, you said...
I said that I didn't understand the point because all they do is sit around and sew and walk around the room and talk, and it's just a bunch of people gossiping. And I mean, I get I'm enjoying it, but this idea of women sewing beside each other and then looking to one another and going, shall we walk? And then getting up and pacing around the room. What is that? I mean, I guess it's England in the 19th century, right? Yeah. 19th century
was it
British
19th?
Literature. Yeah, I believe so. Isn't it the 1800s? Hey, Siri. When was Pride and Prejudice published? Yeah, 1813. Look back.
She began it in 1796, 1797.
Okay. So, yeah, 18th into 19th century British literature. But I can't believe being an English major myself, I can't believe I've never read it. I have seen that movie, and I think it's the Colin Firth one.
The long one?
No, I haven't seen the BBC version of it. No, I've seen the...
Bridget Jones' Diary?
No, Colin Firth was Mr. Darcy for someone, wasn't it? No, you know what? I think I did see the Keira Knightley version. I don't know what I've seen. Is Colin Firth in the BBC version?
Uh-huh.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. All I know is I'm reading it now, so I'll be ready for this reboot, and I will go and see it, dang it, because it will be fresh in my mind, and I'll be ready to complain about how bad the movie is. There's also a Sense and Sensibility reworked.
Why do they have to go do that?
Oh, is that going to ruin it for you?
Well, the one I like has Emma Thompson and Kate Winslet.
Oh.
And Hugh Grant. And
oh, my. Is that like 90s?
Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Yeah, see, and that's one I haven't seen either. I'm kind of excited about the new Downton Abbey because I do love an eye candy British, you know, sort of British countryside scenes and all of that. I love that. So, but yeah, I'll go see that with you. I'd see Sense and Sensibility.
I took a Jane Austen class.
Okay.
Well, that explains
it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of myself for reading Pride and Prejudice. Maybe I will bring it to the next episode. Maybe I'll finish it by then. I'm sort of reading it in the background.
I think people know what it's about, but you're welcome to
spoilers.
Tell them.
Does she get together with Mr. Darcy or not? Also, I didn't mention The Woman in Cabin 10, which is a Ruth Ware thriller, and People We Meet on Vacation, which is an Emily Henry, and then The Love Hypothesis, an Allie Hazelwood rom-com coming out.
Yeah.
So lots to see on the big and little screens if you're a reader.
You know, you asked me about my relationship with books and their film adaptations, and I am watching something now that is a book adaptation, and it's on Prime, and it's the series The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Oh, yes. A lot of people are into that now.
Well, it's by Jenny Han, and I believe she's doing the adaptation as well.
Oh, the screenplay?
The screenplay. And my daughters told me that when she recorded the audiobooks, she actually had the characters who play these characters on TV record the audiobooks. So we're hearing their voice from the beginning.
Oh, very cool.
And I don't know what deal she made with Taylor Swift, but you can always tell. My daughters are trying to tell me all the Easter eggs. I mean, I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it just to catch all of the Easter eggs. I mean, it's a little bit of Sabrina.
Okay.
It's a little bit.
And you're watching it with your girls?
Well, in separate cities.
Oh, that's
very
cool.
But
very cool.
And there are certain times when she's with one brother, like this type of song will play. But when she's with this other brother, it's always a Taylor Swift song. And you know from watching the New Heights podcast that Taylor Swift decides who gets to play her music.
Yes.
And it's, I don't know, it's just kind of fun to, you know, when you hear that song come on, you know Conrad's going to be walking into the room.
Conrad.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm tempted to check it out.
And my girls have read the books. And
because it is a series, right?
It's a series. Mm-hmm. But I have not. And I don't know that I would. Maybe I would go back and read that. Who knows?
Yeah. You've got a lot to read.
I do.
Sometimes it's okay to just say, this is just one I'm going to watch. I'll just watch it.
Yeah. But one thing's like my daughter would say in the series, you know, you might get an internal thought. But it's not as much as you're reading on the page. Mm-hmm. On the page, you have all of the internal thoughts, and you know everything that they were thinking.
Right.
At, you know, when they were tasting the peaches at the farmer's stand or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I do think that it's missing something, probably. I don't know that.
No doubt.
But I am a little bit curious about, you know, would I enjoy the series even more had I read the book?
Yeah, that's why I really love when they do movies of short stories, because I feel like that's a better fit.
Yeah.
You know, History of Sound, I could not be more excited about that movie. I mean, I feel like that is, it's just made for the screen. I think it's going to be really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that sounds like a good place to stop.
Okay. Well, until next time.
Keep turning those pages. Bye, Beth.
Bye, Suzanne.
Books and Whatnot is a production of KMUW Wichita. Our team of engineers, producers, editors, and hosts are Mark Statzer, Torin Anderson, Haley Krausen, Jonathan Huber, Luann Stevens, Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Suzanne Perez. You can reach us by email sent to podcasts@kmuw.org, on Twitter @BooksAndWhatnot, and on Instagram, books_and_whatnot. Find more conversations and a list of books discussed in this episode at kmuw.org.
It's rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.